previously on Endangerously Sports.
I'm telling you, OBJ is going to have the biggest game of his career. Eli Manning, he is lights out in the playoffs.
But you know what? The Houston Texans are primed to actually win the Super Bowl with JJ. Well, he's not playing.
Oh.
Endangerously
Sports.
Yeah.
And we're back.
And that was incredibly out of tune.
Perfectly.
Like you were a bit pitchy. I'm not gonna lie, it was kind of like a cat was trapped in a brown paper bag and you sat on it on a roller coaster.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. That's pretty bad.
Oh, my bad. Yeah. Misinterpreted.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what you were going for, but it wasn't the cat in the bag on the roller coaster. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, how about the first round of the playoffs?
It was filled with very few surprises.
So, has there ever been a wild card round, the less wild?
I know. It was like, I think the only thing surprising about it was how unsurprising it was.
Yeah, like, the funny thing is, I don't know if you would agree with me on this, but especially on Saturday, especially with the car injury, because obviously I think that we kind of had some expectations for Oakland, and we kind of went ahead and just stopped having those expectations after Carr got hurt.
Yes.
But, like, I had no desire for any of the games on Saturday.
Yeah, I really
and
didn't
then
either.
Kind of just keeping up with them, like, oh my God. Uh-huh. Like, they're just as bad as I felt like they were going to be.
Yeah, I was...
I didn't expect Houston to score that much, but...
Yeah, I didn't quite, bad. But... Yeah, I think... That Oakland looked, because I did watch the games just, you know, kind of less intently than I feel like I normally would during the playoffs. Oakland looked like they had given up on their season.
Yeah, I would agree on that a lot.
And so the Texans offense looked like it was okay because they were playing against a defense that is typically okay to good. But that had totally given up on the year. And so that was just, I mean, what do you, and the Raiders offense couldn't get anything going. So like, that's even, so your defense is demoralized because your offense can't do anything and everyone's already demoralized because you lost your guy. I mean, there is real legitimate credence to the idea that, I almost feel like Derek Carr secured his like an MVP by like getting hurt because you saw like oh he is the team now that maybe that's a little unfair because I think a lot of it was just the demoralization that they had. I mean I think the team is better than they played.
I agree.
They felt like they were playing for nothing.
I guess the closest parallel that we really have is how much you saw the air come out of the room in Minnesota before the season started when Teddy went down?
Yes.
And yet they put together a run. Like where did they go? They start 5-0? 6-0?
Yeah.
And
I think it was 6-0.
I feel like it was at least 5. I feel like it was 6. But they kind of put a little run together and that did not happen in Oakland.
No.
From week 17. I mean, week 17 was one of those games where, I mean, they got put to them by the Broncos, but like you really felt like they need to do a little something.
Yeah.
Just to get out of this mental slump that they're suddenly in.
Right. They just needed to get a little swagger. Just
just get in a field goal range.
Yeah.
A field goal on the Broncos D would have to feel like a little bit of a win.
I know, because you would think that, I mean, you know, we talked about it in the last time we recorded that the Broncos felt like they were either going to play spoiler or they were going to kind of show up with, I guess, kind of the attitude that Oakland seemed to show up with was that like, well, we're done.
So
because they were already eliminated from playoff contention, but they were able to unseat the Raiders for the number one seed or the number two seed rather. They were potential number one seed.
Yeah, but then I mean, it just you almost look at the game and you wonder. Did Denver really decide to play spoiler that much, or did Oakland just lay down and die that much?
I think it was a little above.
Somewhere in the middle, I think. But I'll tell you, the one that gets me the most is when you watch what happened with Oakland, like, I don't think that there's any way you can really legitimately look at it and say, oh, this is all Connor Cook's fault.
No, no.
But, man, it really felt like we're going to make a change.
Right.
And so, especially after the game, when the conversation comes out now that supposedly Del Rio was actually looking to put McGloin in, and the coaching staff was like, oh, you know what, I don't think that Cook is the biggest problem. I think that he's just, unfortunately, being handed this card based on everything else that we're doing wrong, so right. leave him in there. I'm really, really... McGloin did nothing before getting hurt in week 17.
Oh,
and it was his non-throwing shoulder.
Yeah.
So granted, that's never going to feel good, but his throwing shoulder was healthy.
Yes.
And Connor Cook's was not looking so fresh.
No.
I mean, he was looking like a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand. With your season on the line, you're going to leave a rookie out there that is struggling.
Yep.
And not put out the most tenured player on the roster.
Yeah. I mean, because let's be real about it. The Texans, if it weren't for Derek Carr getting hurt, the Texans were the worst team in the playoffs, I think.
Oh, yeah. I think with Derek Carr being hurt, they were still the worst team in the playoffs.
Yeah.
But Oakland played way worse.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I'd agree. And so I think if they could have gotten really anything cooking on offense, anything at all.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we'd have been looking at a different game, but...
Right. I mean, I know the final was, what, 27-14?
Yes. That sounds right.
Yeah. But, I mean, really, I mean, that one touchdown was...
Right.
Like, the writing was still on the wall at that point. I was like, well, who cares?
Yeah, the, you know, in the week before that that Oakland-Denver game, I think was that the seeds were planted for, we're going to be a one and done in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because they looked bad. Their offense looked miserable. I mean, but even when McGloin was in there, he wasn't good. He wasn't good either. And that drive that he got battered, like, cause I don't know if you saw that drive where he did get injured and taken out of the game. They hurt his leg, his shoulder. There was something else. Oh, they thought he might have a concussion. I mean, it
yeah.
That guy looked like I don't know, something that like Brett Favre would be doing, like his arms hanging off. He's like, keep me in, coach. Yeah. I'm still good.
Tape it up, put it back in.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just one of those deals where as much as I feel like the result wouldn't have changed, I just feel like, man, this entire season that we've built, which, you know, was looking so unbelievable up until week 16 and three quarters.
Yeah.
I feel like a Harry Potter reference there. But, like, it's all gone.
Yeah.
Like, do you not just say, you know, Cook, look, dude, you've done well. You're not going to be starting for us next year because Derek Carr is going to be.
Right.
Plain and simple. So we're going to put McGloin in just to see if he can do anything, if he can create some kind of spark.
Yeah,
I was shocked. Like, honestly, it's funny because I feel like even the crew doing the game talked about how we're probably going to see quarterback change the second half. And then it didn't happen.
Right.
And then you hear afterwards that the rest of the coaching staff talked Del Rio out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't think the result would have changed.
I don't think so
either. Maybe it would have been closer, but...
I don't even know that, but yeah.
I still feel like you have to give your team a fighting chance.
Yeah.
And nothing against Connor Cook, because, I mean, dude might end up being a very serviceable backup. He might get some starts at some point. Like, obviously, it's not going to happen in Oakland. It happened now because two guys got hurt.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he could end up becoming Kirk Cousins somewhere at some point, but he's not going to as long as Derek Carr's there.
Yeah.
So, obviously, his future's not in Oakland.
Mm-mm.
But... like, I don't know what you're trying to showcase there other than how bad your team is.
Yeah.
By letting him continue to struggle out there. Like,
it was an odd decision.
And again, I don't know that it would have changed much. So take it with a grain of salt, because, you know, the rest of the coaches haven't been like, it's not like it's going to get any better.
Yeah. Exactly.
So why make the change in that? Or to let him grow. But, you know, you've also got Matt McGloin, who's been there forever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're like, oh, no, let's keep Cook out there and let him grow, then. I mean, what are you saying about Cook and McGloin? Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
I don't know,
it left more questions and answers, I guess.
Yeah.
For a team that looked really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
For 16 and, well, for 15 and three quarters
yeah.
of a season.
You know, then the other game in the AFC, I was actually pretty thoroughly surprised at how much Pittsburgh put it on Miami.
Yeah.
Like, I knew that I didn't feel like Miami really had a shot to win.
Yeah.
But I felt like they'd keep it, I mean, what, 30-12? I thought it would be closer.
I thought that Miami would try to come out running and gunning.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, keep the score relatively close for a little bit. And then
right.
Pittsburgh would pull away with all the talent. But Pittsburgh obviously came out very angry about the way Miami shellacked them earlier in the year.
Yeah.
I mean, J.I. ran for, like, what, 204 yards against them?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't run for 100 yards against the Steelers.
No.
And I wonder how many times they've ever given up 200 yards.
Probably not many. And I think that there's a
to
good chance that that was also why they kind of ran Le'Veon Bell down their throats.
They did.
Because to be like, oh, yeah?
Well, I mean,
you've got a running back? We've got a running back.
Well, yeah, well, Antonio Brown had two touchdowns of over 50 yards in the first quarter, too.
Yeah, that was, I mean, that
He's
was nuts.
I mean, honestly, the funny thing is I don't know if you remember back to our wonderful preseason podcast, but we said on paper coming out of last year and the way that they were putting together this roster for the preseason that Pittsburgh was the best team in the AFC on paper.
Yeah.
And they're playing like that now.
Yeah, they are.
So that's scary for anybody else in the AFC.
Mm-hmm. To be honest, I'm really hoping that Pittsburgh loses to the Chiefs.
Yeah.
I know that the Chiefs have a really great defense and a very serviceable offense, but that Pittsburgh offense scares the living crap out of me for the Patriots. I mean, not that the Patriots defense isn't formidable. Got the number one scoring defense in the league, but I mean that.
But when you're able to give them up like that fast,
yeah,
like just the way that they, you know, boom, 62-yard touchdown, boom, 58-yard touchdown,
yeah,
and then just run it down your throat. Like we got a 2-touchdown lead, you're not going to stop Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, like good luck.
Yeah, it's like you know exactly what we're doing. Put as many guys in the box as you want,
mm-hmm.
and oh by the way, we still got these receivers. If you decide to put too many guys in the box,
yes. Yeah. Oh, man, and I tell you, Le'Veon Bell is my favorite running back to watch in the NFL. The way that he gets the ball, and he doesn't come to a stop, but he goes into slow motion for a second while he sees exactly what is developing, if anything is developing.
Like it's a little, and isn't it illegal to have a guy that can pull bullet time?
I know, like it's, it's BS. Like somehow everybody else is moving. And he's just like stopped. And he's like, "All right, where there?" And he's just like,
he's
the bullet.
Yeah,
just straight.
Yeah,
I mean,
he pulls
straight
Tom
the
Tucker
hole.
Walking down the hallway, slow motion. He's doing a slow motion reveal.
Yeah,
people walk by him normal. Yeah, but he is insane. And you know, it's funny because it's almost fitting that you know Bettis retired and they drafted Bell so they can keep their killer bees going on. But like,
right.
I mean. Seriously, like when they're all healthy and clicking, there is no trio in the NFL anywhere close to that trio.
There's just not.
Not even close.
Yeah.
But, so I'm not really surprised. I don't think that Pittsburgh laid it on them. And I think the part of it is the revenge factor. It's like, we're at home to do to you what you did to us on the road.
Yeah.
A few weeks ago.
That's true. Yeah, let's see. You know what's nuts? Just looking at this. Roethlisberger's numbers were pretty pedestrian. 13 for 18, 197 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. I mean, you read that stat line, you're like,
it's not impressive.
Did they win? Like, oh, yeah, but like when you watch the game, each interception was kind of one of those like, eh, it's good as a punt.
Yeah, yeah, right.
You know, Antonio Brown, 5 receptions for 124 yards. Le'Veon Bell, 29 carries, 167 yards. Both of them with 2 touchdowns.
And you know, the funny thing is that, I mean, 29 carries is not a crazy number of carries at all.
Well, in this NFL.
True. I mean, for a team that has a one horse stable.
Right. Then it's not a crazy
number. It doesn't
seem
like a crazy number.
Yeah, that's an Ezekiel Elliott, Adrian Peterson,
yeah.
Le'Veon
Bell. I
mean,
you're not looking at the 40 attempts, but
right. But, you know, it's going to be, I think it's a dead heat on Steelers or Patriots for the Super Bowl in the AFC at this point.
Yeah. Because, I mean, the funny thing is that Pittsburgh's going to Kansas City, because something we'll get into more again when we talk about the NFC, but all four of the divisional round games are actually rematches from the season.
Right.
So in the AFC, when the Patriots get the Texans,
mm-hmm.
that's a team that they already beat 27-0 at home.
With Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah. In week three with no Tom Brady.
Yep. And they had J.J. Watt.
And they have still have Watt.
Yeah, it's...
So, I mean, you're talking about...
Didn't they did still have Watt, right? Or did he might have sat that game. He might have just been hurt a little bit then. I don't know.
Or did he get hurt in that game? I thought that he left...
It's possible, like maybe early in that game. But in any case, the next week, the Patriots got shut out by the Bills with Brissett as the quarterback. So, nothing against Brissett. He's a rookie, fourth round pick or whatever it was. And, you weren't expecting him to do anything other than, like, just don't throw 12 interceptions if you don't mind.
Yeah.
that's about all you're hoping for. But that game is... Yeah, that's a rematch that they actually had talked to Belichick, I guess, after the game, after the games, and asked them, about the preparation, how they prepared. And he said, we started preparing for the Texans as soon as they won. Because, it was Pittsburgh versus Miami.
Yeah,
he basically was like Pittsburgh was going to destroy them, but also
yeah.
There's the fact that literally the week before the Patriots played the Dolphins, which was the second time they've played them this season, so it's not like they didn't already have a game plan that they knew worked with the Dolphins. They had already beaten them twice with two different quarterbacks. They were going to be fine against the Dolphins if they had to switch gears after a day of prep. From the Texans.
Right. But, and then the other side, of course, we already talked about the revenge factor, is that Pittsburgh went down to Miami and they got beat pretty handily with the 200-yard rushing performance by Ajayi.
Yeah. So they come back and win that.
But now they're going to go play Kansas City, who they drubbed.
Yeah.
In Pittsburgh, 43-14.
Yeah, it was...
Like, we talk about Kansas City having the good serviceable defense.
Well, not even serviceable. They've got a really good defense.
Right.
So, but against Pittsburgh was like... Yeah.
If they're clicking the way that they were this week...
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they're not worried about this game.
No.
Having to go to Kansas City...
Yeah.
I have a buddy that's a Steelers fan, and I told him, you know what? If you want to take it for what it's worth. They were playing decent at the time.
Mm-hmm.
They've obviously been playing well to end the season. But for Pittsburgh to go play Kansas City, they've already beaten them big.
Mm-hmm.
And that was at Heinz, when that's like one of the most ridiculous places in the NFL to try to kick field goal.
Yeah.
Like, kicking is ridiculous in Pittsburgh.
It's kind of touchdown or bust.
Yeah. So if it comes down to a field goal, you're in a better position to kick it than you would be if you were in Pittsburgh.
For sure.
So if it's a close game, advantage to playing in Kansas City.
Yeah, for sure.
So
I am a little torn on that game too, the Pittsburgh versus Kansas City. I kind of how I feel like it's a 50-50 with the Steelers and Patriots. It's not quite 50-50, but it's like 60-40 maybe. Like,
yeah,
the Steelers over Kansas City, because up until Pittsburgh turned it on these last couple weeks, I would have said, with Derek Carr out, Kansas City's the second best team. And then Pittsburgh turned it on, and you're like, well.
That's true.
So, it's going to be, and with, what's his name, Tyreek Hill, coming on here at the end of the season for Kansas City, their offense is looking much better.
Yeah, I really think at the end of the day, what it's going to come down to for me is, like, Kansas City, like, they have in stretches shown the ability to flash the offense. But for the most part, they are a very slow, methodical, move down the field kind of a team.
They are.
And I feel like if you want to talk about who has more explosiveness, it's obviously Pittsburgh.
Yeah, for sure.
But with Le'Veon Bell right now, if it comes down to a methodical game too, like, I'll take their explosiveness and their ability to run the clock with Bell.
For sure.
So it's kind of that same boat. I think that mine's probably more like 75-25.
Oh, yeah.
Just because I feel like they're clicking so hard right now. Clicking so hard. About the stupidest thing I've ever said.
I'm just...
Whether or not I'm the stupidest thing I've ever said actually turns out to be Kansas City 25.
Well, I've been higher on Kansas City all year. They've been... quietly been one of the best few teams in the league.
That's the thing about it. It's quiet.
Yeah.
And... the Steelers are just so explosive right now that you just feel like, oh, there's no way.
I know.
We could all be surprised and shocked by what happens.
I mean, yeah, we...
home field advantage. I don't know how much it really matters unless you're in Seattle in the NFL, but...
that's true. Or we'll Atlanta see. Getting crowd noise pumped in.
oh, man.
But, yeah, so let's move on NFC.
So right on to the NFC, so... the first game of the divisional round is actually going to be the Seahawks at the Falcons. This is another game that I'm torn on simply because there's a little bit of heart and there's a little bit of head going on. That also sounds terrible.
Yep.
Well, pay no mind to what's happening behind the curtain at this podcast. For some reason, I want the Falcons to do good. Like, it's the fact that they find unique and creative ways to disappoint every year.
Yep.
Like, I want them to be good. And I just can't stand the Seahawks.
I'm of the exact same mindset. I have been so pleasantly surprised with the Falcons this year because I just...
They didn't ever fall apart.
They always find a way to, and they never did, at least not in the regular season. I mean, they got to the point of having a bye. To me, after the past few seasons they've had...
pat yourselves on the back, guys.
No matter what happens in the playoffs, they could fall apart against Seattle. And first of all, no one would blame them because Seattle just always is good in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And
there's a thing about pedigree when it comes to experience in the playoffs.
Yeah.
It just is.
And I'm sure there would be plenty of questions, but they're also working with, how many years has their coach been with them?
I think this is his second season.
Year. Yeah, who came from Seattle, right?
Yeah, he was there.
He was a defensive coordinator?
Yeah, I think it was their DC.
Suddenly I'm just spacing on his name.
I know.
Because
the funny thing is, because I was trying to remember his name the other day. This is a really random thing, but Amy was asking me something about football, and then she was like, somehow or another got to her name on all 32 teams, and so she wrote them all down. So then she was like, could you name a quarterback from all the teams? Like, yeah. And she's like, can you name all their coaches? And I was like, probably. And she's like, Atlanta. And I'm like, oh.
Is it Dan Quinn?
It is Dan Quinn.
Okay.
Because I was like, is it Bevel? Like, no, wait, he was the other guy. He's the offensive guy. Yeah, Dan Quinn is their coach.
Yeah. I think that's been the biggest difference, really, is the coach. Like, you know.
Nothing against Mike Smith, but there was something about Mike Smith that just felt like...
it was soft.
Well, we're going to lose, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Dan Quinn comes up. He orchestrated the Legion of Boom, and he brought... I think he's
brought toughness.
Yeah, that toughness to Atlanta that they have sorely missed.
Yeah.
And since, like, the Michael Vick days, the pre... Petrino days, you know... because there was a little bit there where Atlanta had one of the best defenses in the league, and they had Michael Vick, and that's why they were in the playoffs there for a few years every year, and it was like, oh, they're creeping up near Super Bowl contender status, and then the Mike Vick arrest and the Petrino bail and like everything happened. Just like, well, they're done.
Not so much.
But yeah, I want the Falcons to win. Have a sneaking
almost as much as I want the Seahawks to lose.
Right. I have a sneaking suspicion it's going to go the other way.
I do too, unfortunately.
Although I do think it'll be close.
Yeah.
I do think it'll be one of those close games that Seattle pulls off like they do.
Yeah.
Here's the
flip side to that. Is that, again, like as we said before, all the games this week are rematches.
Right.
So Atlanta and Seattle did play earlier in the season. They actually played in week 6.
Uh-huh.
And it was a 26-24 win for Seattle. In Seattle. Ooh, so that's a very close game in Seattle.
It is a very close game in Seattle.
You're talking about that venue, that 12th man, that like they do not lose at home. So that was a close one, which gives me a little more optimism that, you know, well, they played so tough there.
Yeah.
And you're talking about now a secondary losing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not like a super, super, not like their biggest piece.
Yeah.
But losing a very important set piece.
Absolutely.
I don't know, man. Different.
To be honest, I actually think Earl Thomas might be their biggest piece on defense.
Yeah. It's so funny because I feel like every year we have a guy that we name, and we usually come back and, well, it's probably Richard Sherman.
Uh-huh.
But then, like, you know, they leave. And
yeah.
Like, you know, we ever had thought about Chancellor, and we had mm-hmm. thought about,
but
yeah, maybe.
Because I've always felt like Earl Thomas is kind of like the...
Kind of like the glue.
Yeah, like he's like the... Because I believe he's their play caller on defense.
That would make sense.
I'm pretty sure. And, like, he's kind of like almost like the quarterback. He's, like, surveying the field and, like, if they, any sort of defensive audible type things that they do to change up coverage quickly. Yeah. Like, I think he's the one that calls it out. So, that can be troublesome going up against a team that is equally as explosive as the Steelers, just about. Like, I mean, they've got a guy who might put up 300 in receiving yards.
Yeah.
So...
I mean, he put up 126 in the loss.
And, you know, the Seahawks, even though they did beat Detroit 26-6 last week, I never felt like they looked particularly impressive, especially considering Detroit was on like a 3-game slide as it was. Like, right. They limped into the playoffs.
They really did. It's never a good position to be in for a team.
No. And
they limped in and then they limped right on out.
Right, exactly. And the Seahawks did beat them pretty handily, but not impressively.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
I mean, there's definitely a spread there, but it's not like you ever felt like they were dominating the game.
No.
They were just dominating the score.
Yeah.
So I'll say this. Like, I was still watching the game because, I mean, it was still... Was it still... it was 20-6. And, like, I mean, that was pretty early in the third quarter.
Right.
When they got the touchdown to go 26. And I turned it off.
Yeah.
I was like, because I know that Detroit can't come back from that.
Yeah. I mean, they come back all the time. But, yeah, once they got that extra touchdown, that was kind of...
It's over.
Yeah, it's done.
Like, they're clearly showing that they're not going to score anything. And at this point, mm-hmm. Seattle's defense is feasting.
Mm-hmm. I think, although, you know, unlike Oakland and Miami... Detroit probably is, well, Oakland is, they end on a disappointment because they lost their quarterback, and I think they're going to be right back there next year.
Right.
Detroit is, I think, on the upswing. I do think that they are finding something, you know.
Life post-Calvin.
Yeah.
Life post-Megatron.
Right? Uh-huh, and with, old Jim Bob Cooter calling the plays. actually think he's a really good offensive coordinator. I think that he figured out a way. And actually with Calvin Johnson at the year before, they rattled off a bunch of wins and that offense looked way better than it was looking. And
yeah,
I think they definitely have some stuff that they've got to correct. But I think next year the Packers might finally get dethroned on top of the AFC North. But
that's funny because at some point they were 4-6 and everybody's like, they're dead. They're
I know. Gone. It's they look dead because they were, it wasn't even just like a,
it wasn't that they were so terrible. They kept just finding ways to lose games.
Yeah.
But I mean, the Colts game was the biggest one. Like, what the crap happened against Colts? But like, it was the fact that Detroit already had the big lead.
Yes.
And then you just watched it whittle away, man.
Uh huh. But yeah, they had landed it.
Yeah.
And then the other,
except they still managed to make the playoffs because Washington.
Right.
Anyways,
the other game though, the Green Bay versus Giants game, that I was genuinely surprised at how the second half was so bad.
Yeah.
Like the first half was great. You know, it was 14-13 and a half. The wheels really did
come off.
Uh-huh.
I think it was 14-6.
Or no, yeah, it was 14-6 because the Hail Mary. They were up 7-6, and then they hit that Hail Mary. Yeah. And like, how in history?
Yeah. Well, it's like, it's funny because if there's, I think we've talked about it before, but like if there's any one thing I absolutely hate as a fan, it's being down by more than three.
Yeah.
And your team's at like midfield or a little behind it. And the only thing that can happen is a freaking Hail Mary that never works.
Right.
Unless you're Aaron Rodgers.
Three in the last 12 months.
Yeah. It's sick.
Or I guess 13 months probably, but that's three in basically the last year.
It's insane.
Has any other quarterback in the NFL hit three Hail Marys in their entire career?
That's a great, great question.
I'm guessing no.
But it's insane. It's just absolutely insane. And you just, you watch that play, like you start watching it unfold and you're like, it's funny because the commentators at the time, because they hit something like 6 seconds left or something like that. They're like, oh, well, we know what they could do is they could try to do a quick out, burn like 3-4 seconds, you know, then try to step a long field goal.
Yep.
And then Aaron Rodgers, he takes a snap and he backs up and I was like, no, that ain't happening.
Yeah, you realize immediately.
And then he's going to heave it. And then you just, like in your brain, all of a sudden, the flashes of the last two happen. And you're like, no.
I know.
No.
Immediately, you knew somebody was catching that.
And then, like, as they cut to the back of the end zone and Cobb is just standing there by himself behind everybody else.
I know. You're like, well,
like, what?
There it is.
What?
He's just going to catch this punt.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't.
It's unfathomable, honestly.
Also,
not just for him to pull it off, but for defenses to keep letting that happen.
Also, how do you not have OBJ, like, in the end zone for that? I mean, did they just... Maybe the Giants thought they would go for, like, they might go for a quick out, but like, you still just throw him in the back, and if they do go for a quick out, they're not gonna like try to run with it and like beat, you know, Odell Beckham, because he's just gonna be back in the end zone.
Yeah,
they're gonna take it and immediately run out of bounds and then kick a field goal.
Right.
That's not that. But if they throw up a Hail Mary, you like get Odell Beckham back there because he would has the best hand skills, the best ball skills of anybody. On either team.
Maybe in the league right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, really, that I felt like that changed the tide of that game. As
it
soon
really
as that
did.
Happened, just it was like, oh, Packers.
Like, just imagine this. Like, imagine that it's a regular game, right?
Yeah.
And that falls incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
Gets swatted down. Like, any normal defender would be like, no.
Right.
And so we go into halftime, and it's 7-6. And it's like, woo, what a barn burner.
Uh-huh.
Well, the reality of it is like, with that score, putting them up 14-6, like, the Giants only got 13 in the game. So, like, they didn't even... The Packers didn't have to score in the second half.
Nope.
Obviously, they didn't droves.
Right.
But, like,
well, also,
you talk about changing the mentality.
Mm-hmm. And then, let's...
Take the wind out of the sails.
You get that confidence built up in Aaron Rodgers. It's never lacking, but when he's just all of a sudden is just like, yep, I can throw up anything, and we're going to score.
Yeah.
And then it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy where he's throwing up anything and they're scoring. Like,
yeah.
It gets ridiculous. And that's... The Packers are offensively playing really, really well. Defensively, I'm not... I'm still not sold. I mean...
That's why this game's going to be a tough matchup.
Yeah.
Because if they can score like that, then it's a shootout.
Right.
And then... In a shootout, it's always tough because do you bet on the team that has the better chance of scoring the points in the shootout?
Uh-huh.
Or do you bet on the team that has the better chance of getting that one stop?
Yeah.
And it's funny that we're even saying that because, I mean, how often have we been saying that the Cowboys defense is so bad?
Yeah.
You know, and
such
all of a
sudden, weird year.
Yeah, it's so weird.
Yeah, because we're used to the Cowboys offense being good.
Right.
Because Tony Romo, he was you
but
know,
I think
he was
we can both
up.
Agree, regardless of whether or not we feel like the Cowboys' defense is outperforming what it should really do, or that it's really getting to where it should be, the Packers' defense is worse.
Yes.
So
no, they've been serviceable of late, but they're not, like, aside from, like, Clay Matthews, which, did you see the play he made, like, the strip sack and the fumble recovery? Oh, my gosh. It was one of the best plays, like... Because what happened was, it was one of those plays where the quarterback's back, you know, going back to throw it, It got hit on the ball on the way back, but his arm went forward. Everybody stopped except Clay Matthews. He was the one who knocked it loose, and it went far. Like, I'm talking like 15 yards away. And, like, everybody's just walking. No whistle blew. And I was just, like, sitting on the couch just with my hands up, like, is anyone going to pick up the ball?
Right.
And all of a sudden, like, you see Clay Matthews, like, as soon as he hit the ball, like, he was, like, shouting to, like, get on the ball, but, like, no one was hearing him. And so he just took off running after it. And, like, I think the Giants player kind of felt him come in and kind of was like, oh, and, like, started to get down, like, realizing maybe something was up, and Clay Matthews just got in and got it. And I was like, what? That was one of the smarter plays I've seen, because, like, you know, 21 players on the field stopped.
Right.
But one didn't, and he got it. And, of course, it's Clay Matthews, because he's Clay Matthews.
Right.
You know, so. But, I don't know, man. Okay. I think the smart pick is Dallas in the Dallas-Green Bay game. I think, I can't decide if I want Green Bay to win, because I kind of do, because, well, first of all, I thought we were seeing two best teams in the NFC in the game between the Giants and the Packers, and so I did kind of feel like whoever won that would probably wind up in the Super Bowl, but they are going to have to go to Dallas, and it is going to be tough. I think the Packers are the only ones who can do that, who are going to be able to go to Dallas and go beat them.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But I do want to, at some point, you know, a Brady Rodgers Super Bowl. I've been wanting that for so long now.
Yeah. You got a good chance this year.
I mean, yeah. And I was just going to say, there's also the chance of, I guess it would be a repeat, right? Who did the Packers beat? It was the Steelers, wasn't it? When they won the Super Bowl?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yes? So I believe we'd be getting a repeat of Roethlisberger and Rodgers, which also would be entertaining.
Although you have to admit, it's always more entertaining when there's two good quarterbacks in the game.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, nothing against, say, like, Kaepernick and Flacco, but...
That was, like, one of the more miserable Super Bowls I remember watching ever.
I mean, like, it was so bad, like, literally the lights went out in the stadium.
Yeah,
they're just like, we're done.
Can we stop this?
Like, this is a travesty. Can we stop this? No. See, the ironic thing to me is, like, Dallas has been so good all year.
Yes.
And I don't want to like them.
Right.
Again, you talk about history. You talk about, like, there's always been something kind of. It's funny because you had Favre, and now you have Rodgers, and it's that gunslinger mentality both ways.
Uh-huh.
So it's. There's something exciting about watching Aaron Rodgers play.
Yes.
You want, like, it's hard not to root for the guy unless you're literally a fan of a team in that division.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? But Dallas did go to Green Bay and beat them 30-16 in week 6. Granted, that is during that stretch when the Packers were not looking so great.
Yeah, it's
at Lambeau. I mean, again, for what it's worth, because I'm pretty sure that Indy beat them in Lambeau too.
Yeah, I think it was in Lambeau.
You know, by a lot.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's so tough because every bit of me wants to pick the Packers as the trendy pick for, oh, they're the hot team, and Dallas is the one that's been cooled because, you know, they had a rough game and then they lost and then they bench players.
Of course, they had a rough game.
Again.
They played Mark Sanchez for over half of it.
Oh, that's true.
I mean, I don't know if anybody remembers the Jets. They had a rough few years there.
Yikes!
The butt fumble.
It's one of those deals that, because we really haven't seen Dallas play in like 3 weeks.
Right. Kind of forget about them.
It's like, oh, I forgot all about them because the Green Bay looks so great. Like, they're going to Hail Mary the crap out of the Cowboys.
That's all they need.
That's all they need. One Hail Mary.
Four Hail Marys. Yeah. You're probably going to win.
It's like, what sin did you commit? No.
the sin of having Aaron Rodgers.
But... Like, every bit of me wants to pick the Packers, but with this voice in the back of my head going, why are you forgetting Dallas?
Yeah.
Why are you forgetting the Cowboys?
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't like them.
Yeah. I do think they're, I mean,
I don't dislike them as much. as I have in the past. There's something kind of exciting about the rookie duo and how well the offensive line's playing, and it's such a different feel.
Yes. Now. It feels like, I mean, it kind of feels like they're rebooting like old 90s Cowboys days, you know? They've got the similar sort of format. They've got the big awesome wide receiver. They've got the awesome running back who you can put the game completely in his hands if you need to. And they've got a good quarterback. Now, I certainly don't think Dak Prescott is any Troy Aikman, at least not at this point. He's a rookie. He sometimes looks like a rookie, but they don't ask him to do a ton because he has Ezekiel Elliott back there.
Right.
He does enough. And here's more than enough.
Yeah. Here's what I'll say. Granted, it's not a complete apples-to-apples comparison because you're talking about a guy that was a more prototypical pocket passer in college.
Uh-huh.
And he was a high draft pick. But if you think back to Ben Roethlisberger's rookie year, they asked him to throw it 15 times and hand it off the rest.
Right.
And, you know, we looked at him and like, well, we don't know how good he really is because all he does is hand the ball off and then they ask him not to lose the game.
Right.
Ben Roethlisberger is a hell of a quarterback.
Yeah, well, same thing with Brady. Brady was, when he took over for Drew Bledsoe, it was, look, we've got this defense, they're the best in the league. Like, throw it 15, 20 times max. Hand the ball off to Curtis Martin.
Yeah.
It was Curtis Martin that first year, I think. Martin. But in any case, hand the ball off. We're going to run it down their throats the best we can.
Dave Meggett.
They're never going to score. Remember
Dave Meggett.
It's going to be great. Yeah. So, you know, that is kind of how the greats start off.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, as a rookie.
You know, I still have the hardest time. Player. Like, I say that, and then it feels like in my head I'm saying, Dak Prescott, it might be Ben Roethlisberger. Like, yeah, that feels like such a stretch
that's
now.
Really.
But you know what? I thought Ben Roethlisberger was going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
But he's one of the elites.
Yeah.
I mean, if it wasn't for his constant health problems, I think we would say he's the second best quarterback in the NFL.
I would think so, too.
Like, and now we're just kind of moving to three behind Rodgers.
Yeah, I mean, well, maybe four behind Breeze. Because Breeze is
still elite. His team's just terrible.
I know. It's so
Let's just
sad.
Put it this way. Breeze still puts up sick numbers.
Yeah.
But it's like when you lose every game, 45 to 38, like.
Yeah, you kind of.
Who cares about 400-yard games at some point?
But in any case, All right, so I think.
So, backing up. So, I'm picking Atlanta and the Cowboys.
Okay.
As much as I want to go Packers, and I feel like Atlanta's probably not a smart pick. I'm going to go Falcons and Cowboys. And then in the AFC, I am going to go Patriots and Steelers.
Agree in the AFC, Patriots and Steelers. You're not going to find me one bit surprised if Kansas City wins that Steelers game, but I think it's going to be Steelers. I might flip it. Like, I think Seattle, Green Bay.
Maybe have another Hasselbeck Bowl.
Right.
That game where he infamously called the coin toss and said, we want the ball, we're going to score, we're going to win.
Yep.
And he threw a pick six on the first play.
Of course.
Anyways.
But I think just... And maybe this is... now that I'm looking at it, this is kind of... I'm kind of picking on legacy at this point. Of like, well, Seattle always makes it happen. Atlanta always makes it fall apart.
Yeah,
you know, and the same with Green Bay and Dallas. Green Bay always pulls through somehow. Dallas always chokes somehow. So maybe there's that part of it. Like, there's just this like history built in. But both Atlanta and Dallas are kind of fresh right now. They've got, you know, Atlanta's got the new coach that does seem to have that team playing much tougher. And Dallas is just... The weird thing with Dallas is I think this year Dallas would have a better chance at making it to the Super Bowl if they had brought Tony Romo back. But long term, I think they
Dak was probably the smart move.
Keep Dak in there. I think you set yourself up for multiple runs by getting him in. You saw how good he's playing. You know, at any time they could have pulled him if like he started playing poorly, but since he never was, it's just building more and more confidence.
Right.
And the fact that they didn't pull him to put in, I mean, arguably a Hall of Famer in Tony Romo, that's gotta feel like, oh, it's the same like with the Brady situation. I'm just like, I mean, this guy, he's one of the best few in the league when he's healthy. How, and they're keeping me in? Okay. They must think I've got something going. Yeah. And like, that just, I think it was the best thing for the team long term. I think this year they had a I think they had a better chance at winning it all with Romo. But I think, Romo's done. Unless, like, Dak gets hurt or he just, like, crumbles in the playoffs, because he is still a rookie who's going to be starting his, you know, it's going to be his first playoff game ever against a team with plenty playoff pedigree. So like, it's not like Rodgers is going to come out there and like be nervous. Like the Packers are going to come out there and be just fine.
They're going to come out there with 6 seconds left until halftime. They're going to throw a Hail Mary touchdown.
Exactly.
Because we're that composed.
Exactly. And you know, you've got Dallas. Dak could come out with nerves, and Zeke could come out with nerves too. Like trying to do a little too much, maybe trying to get it. Like you'll see it occasionally with young running backs, young, really good. Adrian Peterson was a perfect example. Like he'd maybe be trying to do a little too much and like might lose a little bit of like focus on holding onto the ball.
Oh yeah.
You know, things like that.
I mean, as a prime example, speaking back to my personal pain,
uh-huh.
We can sit and talk all day about the penalties against Perfect. For hitting
right.
Brown, and then for Pac-Man defending himself against the Steelers coach who was on the field for no reason, instigating yeah. something. But none of that would matter if Jeremy Hill didn't fumble
yeah.
on the first play after we intercepted the ball.
Yeah. Wouldn't have mattered
he
at
was
all.
Angry like, because the game was over. The way the game was going.
Yeah.
The game was over. We won. We were already in field goal range because yeah. of where we were. If he doesn't get stripped,
that's game.
It's game. It's over. It's absolutely over. So... because they had one timeout, they would have had to use it right there.
Uh-huh.
Knees.
Yeah.
Done.
You I couldn't believe watching you, that game.
You, yeah, it's so painful because it's like the only thing you can't do is turn it over.
Yeah.
And there it is. So, young running backs getting to the playoffs. That happens.
Yeah.
So, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if on the Packers sideline they're like, you put a helmet on the ball every chance you get.
Oh, yeah.
Because
if we can rattle him. With great ball skills, like he'll yeah. knock a ball loose.
Yeah.
Sounds great to say.
Yeah. Like, there's so many terrible one-liners
yep.
in this podcast.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Clay Matthews, you're like a ball loose.
So,
ow.
Now that we have made predictions that are sure to be wrong.
Yes.
Who do you have in the Super Bowl?
So, looking at those matchups, considering that I have picked Falcons, Cowboys, and I have picked Patriots, Steelers, right now, I would say, man, it's so hard because it's like you pick the Falcons to not get upset by the Seahawks.
Uh-huh.
So they can turn around and lose to whoever they're going to play.
Yeah.
It feels like they've played so much better, but they're still not as good as either of those two teams.
No.
So, I guess I'm going to have to say Dallas, as much as... it's just I feel dirty saying that. Like,
right.
I need to wash myself.
Uh huh.
And I think that they are going to be taking on the Steelers. I think that yeah. is going to be the game of the year.
I do too. You know, it'll be. I think one way or another, I would take the AFC team to win the Super Bowl this year.
Same way.
I think just like last year. Where the Broncos and Patriots game was so good. And that really last couple years, the Broncos-Patriots games have been so good.
Right. I mean, the Broncos-Patriots game last year was 20-18.
Yeah. Sick. Like, it was... Yeah, they went for a two-point conversion that didn't work, and that could have sent it to overtime. Like, that's how close it got. And...
Like, I'm almost willing to say that the Patriots-Steelers AFC Championship game,
mm-hmm.
first team to score a touchdown in overtime.
Yeah, right.
Like, it feels like it could be that, you know.
It could absolutely be one of those types of games. And
because you know they're not getting field goals in that piece.
No. No, no, no.
It's 4th and 19. Go for it.
Yep.
What?
Go for it. Next thing you know, either Antonio Brown or Deion Lewis is broken loose. Yeah. But yeah, I think that will be the game of the year. I agree. I'm going to go Patriots because I do think they are better all around. And I think adding Michael Floyd, I think
the X factor,
the last game of the season, he's coming along slowly, but man, he is coming along. And you know, he made touchdown reception, huge block. Great like block. He made an instant impact once they actually got him involved. And I think that if that progresses, you know, that's a big F. Like, we're just going to have to wait and see how these games go. But if that progresses, that doesn't make up for Gronk, but it makes up for most of the ground they lost by losing Gronk. Does that make sense? Like, they didn't. Because with Gronk, if Gronk's in this, there's no thought in this for me. Patriots are the Super Bowl champions. Like, I think that they would be that much better than everyone else.
Yeah.
Because there's
just nobody that can match up with them defensively. Right.
They'd have the number one scoring defense in the league. Plus, they'd have who was the person who is the biggest nightmare matchup for anybody else in the league. But they don't have him. So that changes everything. So if Michael Floyd, pushes them up just a little bit. So I'm going to go with New England. But it's tough. Like, that's a coin flip
game.
That's a coin flip to me. Like,
and if that game is not a really close game, and I would go as far as say, and a decently high scoring game.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I think you're going to be looking at two teams in the 40s.
Yeah.
Then I will be disappointed.
Right.
And it's funny because that's not even this round. Like,
yeah, I know.
We got to get there first.
We got to get, yeah, exactly.
Kansas City could win, and then it's just like, well, Troy, you picked them. They'll go and win. So.
Houston could win.
You're so funny.
What if Houston does win? Like, we'll all just be like, what? What is happening? 2017's already a mess.
Yeah.
Black is white, up is down.
It's like, how do we go from Arizona and New England to Houston and the Seahawks?
Yeah, like, what is going on? So then with Seattle, Green Bay, for my side of the NFC, I would take Green Bay in that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would take Green Bay in that.
And I mean, it feels like, again, it's sort of the same thing I said about the Falcons. If they were to impress and win, they're not as good as either of those two teams.
Right.
And so if we're talking about them being potentially better than Seattle, then by extension, that means Seattle's not as good as either of those two teams either.
I agree, yeah.
So the winner of that one, of the 1-4
I think
game,
the Dallas-Green Bay game, yeah, that'll be whoever wins that. That's the, yeah.
Yeah.
I think you've got
NFC representative for
Dallas-Green Bay. And then jumping ahead, probably New England-Pittsburgh, if we jump ahead a week. But yeah, I think either... So Green Bay is, for me, 2 weeks in a row of whoever wins this game, I think, might go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they've turned it on. There's that part of me that doesn't quite trust Green Bay, but I look at every team in the NFC, and I don't trust a single one of them.
Yeah, I agree. That's the thing, is that, and it's ironic because there's two teams in the AFC that I trust, one that I almost trust, and then one that I think is the worst team in the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly.
And then in the NFC, there's no one that I have faith in.
You know who?
But the closest one would be Green Bay.
Yeah.
Just from experience.
They'd be the closest one.
Getting there.
And that's really, for me too, I think probably why I still kind of run with Green Bay is... So you've got Russell Wilson, Matt Ryan, Dak Prescott, or Aaron Rodgers. I think those names are also like what kind of push me in that direction.
Oh yeah,
but some teams are already looking to next year. Well, before we get there, actually, the thing I was going to say,
jerk,
Bill O'Brien maybe should be considered for Coach of the Year.
You know what's really funny is that. There are two or three coaches that were still kind of in talks about, are they really safe? And we've kind of started to hear the rumblings die down. Like there was, you know, a mention in Indianapolis that Pagano was safe. There was a mention in Houston that there was never really a talk about Bill O'Brien not being safe. Even though there was never, they never said he's safe beforehand. But now the season's over, like, we were never going to fire him.
Yeah.
But the thing that I find interesting is I don't know if you've seen all the coaching rumors, but there are at least three teams, if not more, that are trying to negotiate Houston for a trade for O'Brien.
Really? I did not know that.
Like, there's several teams that are literally in the running trying to find out if Houston would be open for a trade.
You know, you put him on maybe the Chargers? That team could suddenly become really good. It's just funny, they one of the teams that are... do you know if they're one of the teams?
I believe so.
Because, like, I could see that being, you know, Philip Rivers' last ride. Like, he's only got a couple more years left in him.
Yeah.
You get him, like... Because Bill O'Brien was the offensive coordinator for the Patriots for a while there that kept, you know, that offense, a high-flying offense, when McDaniels was gone. And he went and he made Penn State turn that program around that was all but dead and came to the Texans. And he's literally had zero quarterbacks on his roster.
Yeah.
And they've won their division 2 years in a row. I think they've won a playoff game 2 years in a row, haven't they? Did they win a game last year? Because didn't they play the Patriots last year too in the playoffs? Am I making that up? I could be. In any case, they have well exceeded their talent. Like, the results that they've gotten have well exceeded their talent.
Oh, no. Houston got blown out by Kansas City.
Oh, that's right.
I forgot about that game. Yeah.
That's right.
It's because it was, it was that forgettable game. That was the 30-0 game, yeah.
Okay, never mind. Scratch that part. But in any case, Houston... They're definitely outperforming.
Okay, they have not actually named the teams involved, but several sources said that many teams are currently looking for a head coach. We're waiting to see if a coach trade with the Texans is possible.
It's because I think I people are seeing what I'm talking about. Like, man, he's got nothing on. Like, he's got DeAndre Hopkins and he's got defense that
did you see what his team did to the highly touted Oakland Raiders with the quarterback he didn't even want. You know, put that into perspective.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it sounds really rude, but
I mean,
true.
It's a quarterback he didn't want. He put him, like, he was like, okay, you're done. Took the ball away. And then he's like, God, I gotta give it back.
Against my will. Yeah. Yeah.
It was like, so to the coaches.
So, your breaking news this day.
Yeah.
Is that the Broncos and Bills have both made hires.
Yes, they have.
Get your take on this. So, the Broncos, of course, Gary Kubiak retired amidst health concerns.
Right. Which, and that's a bummer.
It is a bummer because it feels like he's been a really good coach for a while.
Yes.
He got a bum rap in Houston, I feel like. But, you know, I mean... Houston obviously played their cards fairly well to get the coach that everyone wants to trade for now.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, coach trades are such a common thing.
Exactly.
But the Broncos have hired Vance Joseph to a 4-year contract to fill the void.
I think it's a good hire. They're a defensive team. Got a defensive guy. I do think that's probably... He might be even a better fit than Kubiak was.
Maybe.
I felt like Kubiak was... He was gifted a great defense. And he did have... defensive coordinator, whose name I'm suddenly forgetting.
Yeah. Former coach.
Yes.
Cowboys.
Yeah.
Get there.
Oh, it's not going to happen. Could already feel it. Because he was also defense coordinator for
if you're
going
to get in the
Texans.
Water, then you might need to put your waders on.
Literally, like, it's gone.
Oh, my God. Wade Phillips.
Wade Phillips.
There I even tried to get you here with the horrible Wader joke.
I know. So anyway, I think Kubiak was kind of gifted that.
Yeah.
But, you know, who knows? It'll be, it's always good to see like a young coach get a chance to. And I think
I've always had the thought that he's been great with defensive schemes and a couple of different stops. I mean, but he really turned around that secondary in Houston.
Uh-huh.
And then he's been the defense coordinator in Miami. It's a solid hire. You know, it's you talk about bringing a coach to play to your team's strength.
Yeah.
Because I feel like most times teams usually, we have this great defense, so we want to go get this great offensive coach.
Yeah.
And, like, the offense never really comes around. Sometimes you get lucky and the coach wins the championship.
Right.
But usually it's just like he was never able to build up the other side of the ball the way that the side that he, not his specialty, already was.
Yeah, exactly.
Like they just end up staying this lopsided beast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, that's because what happens because he's the head coach now. He's not the offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
But I think it's a solid hire.
Yeah, I think they'll probably, I don't know how Wade Phillips will feel about it, about if he's going to stay or not. If he stays, I think that's even better because you've got defensive-minded head coach, a defensive coordinator who's one of the best in the business. Just
you know, and it's really sad that he has not been successful as a head coach.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think that sometimes we take for granted the fact that someone can be really good at being a coordinator.
Right. Rex Ryan.
Like, stay there. Like, you know, this is what you are talented at.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can build a beast of a team.
Right.
And it's like, you look at him getting fired in Dallas, and, like, he immediately was rebuilding defenses.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like,
uh-huh.
See, this is what you do.
Yeah. And like, and that, I kind of hope that he stays around. I think the Broncos will be better for it, but I do kind of get a feeling like he might be like,
he would probably kind of go with the regime.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll bring in Rob Ryan.
I don't. Could you imagine? I'm sure he would just be like, "Nah, I'll just be defensive coordinator too." The Ryans can stay far, far away. Well, yep. I mean, if you could bring Rex Ryan in, actually,
I don't think he's ever going to be a coordinator again.
I don't think so either. I think he might. He might have too much of an ego to go back down to it.
I agree.
I feel like I think he would be better suited. I think it would be the best thing for him.
He could go back to being a really good defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Or, it's funny because they started talking, like, could he be a college coach? And it's like,
I don't see that. I don't see it at all. I think he might just be one of those guys that floats around and has a job for 2-3 years. And, like, just.
I think that he might be a commentator for a couple of seasons.
I could see that too.
It's like, I feel like there's enough toxicity there that I think he's not going to get hired immediately.
Yeah.
And then he's either going to float for a couple of years and then someone's going to give him a shot.
Yeah.
Or he might be done.
He could. I could see it.
Unless he, you know, maybe 5 years down the road swallows his pride and decides to be a defense coordinator again.
Mm-hmm.
But
you kind of got to stay in it to do it. Like,
yeah.
Like if he takes an extended break, like maybe more than a year, and he doesn't come back as a defensive coordinator, then I'd say he never comes back as a defensive coordinator. Like maybe he could come back as a head coach after a year. Maybe after 2 years, but definitely not as a coordinator.
Yeah. So the second hire happening is the Bills hired Sean McDermott, the defensive coordinator in Carolina.
Yes.
To be their head coach.
I find that a little interesting, though, because I thought Carolina's defense looked poor this year.
Yeah, like, as good as they were a year ago, they were pretty atrocious this season.
Yeah.
And the thing to me is that you talk about. So what did they do? They went and they got all these defensive players. And then they went and got this defensive mind to be a head coach.
Yep.
A defensive mind that his defense was falling apart.
Yeah.
And doesn't it feel kind of like they just did the same thing?
Yeah, it feels like it's the same hire.
Yeah, like obviously I don't know anything about Sean McDermott. I think that when you look at a lot of the coordinators that get hired, I feel like it's about 50-50 guys that you've heard of. You know kind of their story, what's going on with them.
Uh-huh.
And then there's these guys that you're like, what?
Yeah.
Mike Tomsula. McAdoo.
Right.
But sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. But there's something about this pick that just feels suspiciously like, oh, 2 year flash in the pan Rex Ryan pick again?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to hate on him because, like, again, I know nothing about the guy. He might be the best guy. I mean, but it feels like they put a lot of stock in Anthony Lynn, making him the interim coach. A lot of talk about them going ahead and making him the head coach because he was a positive guy, changing the mentality there.
Yep.
And then they just kind of said, no, we're going to go out and hire the same guy that we just hired 2 years ago.
Yep.
Like, it just feels kind of off-putting. Not that I'm majorly on the Anthony Lynn bandwagon or anything.
Uh-huh.
And not that I feel like he was the guy that should have the job. Because, you know, when a team's not doing well, like, the thing that always gets me about teams is when you have a guy that's not doing well, or your team's not doing well, and you fire the coach, and then you promote somebody up. It feels like, so this wasn't working, but we're going to keep it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, exactly.
There's something about that that just always feels strange to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, there's this huge buyer beware thing. Like, anytime that you have an interim coach, because it's always going to be someone on your staff.
Right.
You're obviously not going to go find someone on the street to come in and coach you for the last 3 weeks of the year.
Yeah, exactly.
But, like, when they do the interim coach and make them the head coach thing, like, it's always like,
what? So you guys are going to be bad for a couple years? That's the plan? Yeah. Stockpile on draft picks?
So, you know, for that sake, it's like, well, that you can make the argument against, you know, just promoting the offensive guy. But it just feels so much like a Rex 2.0.
Yep, it does. I agree.
And maybe I wouldn't feel so bad about it if I knew more about him and if Carolina's defense hadn't kind of taken 4 steps back this year.
Yeah, that's the thing for me. It's like, if they had hired him after last year,
yeah,
I'd be like, oh, I get that. Like, he's, look what he did with this Carolina defense. Then they, for them to regress so quickly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just immediately.
I mean, and you're talking about losing one big corner in free agency.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, they didn't really have, like, devastating injuries.
No.
They really just didn't play well. And no. I know the offense contributed by not helping out.
Right.
But still, like.
Yeah, I
you know, listen to the podcast a couple weeks ago of all the teams that had
the better than the Panthers. Defense. Yeah.
And then that's kind of all you need to know.
Mm-hmm. But then there's one more hire.
And then that was actually a couple days ago. But the Jaguars did hire Tom Coughlin.
Uh-huh. As the executive vice president. To be an
executive vice president. And, they did the interim promotion thing.
Uh-huh.
And good old Doug Marrone. Or is it Maroney? I meant to look that up.
Thanks, Maroney.
I just want to say that to feel like I'm
like
DC Universe.
I know. Exactly. I'm like 80% certain it's Maroney.
So they promoted him.
Uh-huh.
And it's funny because, you know, he was the coach at Buffalo before Rex Ryan.
Yep.
And he was the coach at Syracuse before that.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like his entire NFL pedigree was written on the fact that Ryan Nassib had a great last year at Syracuse.
Right.
And they thought that they might draft him and have a coach quarterback combo, and then they didn't.
It didn't happen. And then. And
so nothing against him, because, I mean, obviously, they played well the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. They did.
But they should have done it all year.
Right.
So, I mean, it's kind of like they've got the talent. So it's not like they're devoid of talent.
No. And something was wrong with that team this year.
Yeah.
So
there was just something off.
I don't know if it was the head coach. Like, maybe the environment was just off in that locker room, and like, and it had to do with the coach. But you also do take away a guy who this year the offense, it never really got going.
They sputtered all year.
Yeah, I guess until the end they did get going when he became head coach, which is still weird. I wonder, was he was still calling the plays for the offense though, wasn't he?
I think so.
So maybe that's it. Maybe they felt like the head coach was in his way. Like, maybe the head coach was kind of dragging what he wanted to do down on, and then they were like, well, let's give you a shot and see if what you want to do works. We've got the same guys that did so well last year. Those last couple weeks, like, Allen Robinson's numbers came back. Like, he was I thought he was in some sort of a coma this year.
Yeah. Marquise Lee was absolutely destroying the rest of the receiver numbers.
Uh-huh.
Like, the last quarter of the season, at least.
Right. So, I feel a little bit the same way I do about Sean McDermott on this hire, because of the regression. But then again, the last couple weeks, that slight progress, the potential there, and also having Tom Coughlin as the executive vice president, he knows football. You know, I think the jury is probably out on whether or not he was ever a great coach, but he seemed to be a good leader overall, and I think he'll have lots of wisdom he can pass down through there. So maybe that combination helps too. Like with the Bills, they're a mess. Top to bottom, they're a mess. So hiring a guy whose defense just regressed, that just feels like a really Bills thing to do.
Yeah. Like, you know, we haven't made the playoffs in all these years, and I mean, why bring up a good thing?
Let's keep it up.
Wait.
Four more years.
I guess here's my funny question for you here, because we're talking about a team that's in the state of Florida, right?
Yes.
So put on your thinking cap here and think about others' professional sports teams in the state of Florida.
Okay.
How soon before Tom Coughlin goes Pat Riley?
He's like, get out of here.
He fires Maroney and just starts coaching.
I actually could never see Tom Coughlin doing that. I couldn't see it. But that is a good question.
And a really awkward segue. Yeah, to
get out of here, Van Gundy. Yeah.
Van not going to coach any year.
Right. So that does leave the Rams, Chargers, and 49ers jobs still open.
And I think, obviously, the Chargers is the most attractive of those positions.
For sure.
Because you talk about an offense that's got some playmakers. If Phillip Rivers had an offensive line, it feels like he does enough to win games when he's not on his back.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they could get helped on defense, obviously. But I mean, the 49ers is an atrocious situation.
Mm-hmm.
And the Rams, talk about a year of regression. You know, talked about this with the Jaguars, but...
Well, and all three of those teams, though, their front office, all three of them, they're a mess.
Yeah.
So, none of them...
Bring your brooms. It's a mess.
Yeah. None of them are actually that attractive options, but of the three, I would say the Chargers are the most attractive just because the team is better.
Yeah. Well, and I think, obviously...
Oh, the Rams have more toys. The
Rams have a lot of offensive pieces.
Uh-huh.
They've got two or three really good defensive pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Like, young pieces that... You know, if you put them into a system that continues to develop them, the fear is that they're going to plateau out and then they're just going to be terrible.
Yep.
But obviously the 49ers is the worst scenario.
Yeah, for sure. I know that they interviewed, I believe they interviewed both McDaniels and defensive coordinator for the Patriots.
Matt Patricia.
Patricia, yeah. McDaniels and Patricia, I believe they interviewed them both. Actually, I think all three of those teams might have interviewed them both.
I think they all three did. I think all three of these teams all interviewed...
Like, kind of all the usual suspects.
All the big names out there. They all interviewed Vance Joseph. They all interviewed Sean McDermott.
Uh-huh.
They all interviewed Anthony Lynn.
I'll tell you what, if I am a guy who is, you know, a top sort of tier, like, every year, you're going to get interviewed for all these good jobs... I don't take any of these three jobs because there's going to be a Broncos job that pops open next year. You know, like something like that will happen again. Like there's always something, even a Jaguars job. Like I'll tell you what, if they would have, like say Josh McDaniels took over that team would be dangerous. Like that team would be very dangerous actually. But the Rams, Chargers, and 49ers. If I'm one of those top guys, like one of those coordinators that gets interviewed every year, I'm not taking any of those jobs.
No. It's not worth it.
Especially because most of those coordinators are on good teams already. So you're like, let me just keep adding to that resume there until like one of the real good teams comes a calling.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. So the three positions left.
Uh-huh.
Chip Kelly. Obviously, we know one that's not.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. 49ers.
The way they do things.
You're like, you know what?
We just hired a great offensive mind on a 6-year contract. Like, we're also going to have to pay him for the other 2 years of the contract that we just voided.
It's like an 8-year contract, really. Yeah. But yeah.
It's really front-loaded. I don't know what to tell you.
And they're all three in California, I just realized.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing that I was thinking is, with all the offensive pieces that they have, could Chip Kelly make the Rams work?
No.
Because the funny thing is, I'm thinking kind of like Mike Martz. You know, like,
yeah,
Mike Martz, I don't think anybody yeah. would ever sit and say he was a phenomenal coach.
You know what? You got me right
but
there.
He,
like, oh,
he ran such a fluid offensive system.
Yeah.
That somehow or another, he kept a job in St. Louis for a long time.
Yeah. You...
With some quarterbacks that you would not really write no. home about either.
Well, you convinced me that the Rams maybe, Chargers definitely not.
I don't think the Chargers would, for yeah, sure.
I'm pretty sure Phillip Rivers would just retire. He'd be like, nope, I'm done. Screw you guys.
It's like, I'm changing my number 20. I'm being Barry Sanders this year. Sorry,
yep.
I'm not playing for him. Yeah. And the funny thing is, because... we're just cycling through those coordinators that have been interviewed everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't even have a logical pick for any of them, other than saying that if Kelly were not going to leave the NFL and might, because the thing is, obviously, when it comes to colleges, he's done.
Yeah.
This year. You know, that's just mm-hmm. the nature of the cycle, is that it starts earlier than their season ends.
Yep.
And because he's a completionist and he's going to see out this year, unless he gets fired,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, there's not going to be a position open to college until next year.
Right.
So,
I think
if it were going to be one of those three teams, it's obviously the Rams.
Uh-huh.
But
I don't think so either, and I don't think...
Do you think he would take an offensive coordinator position?
No. Definitely not. He would just go back to college. He would just pull Nick Saban. He'd say, you know what? Took a swing at it. I'm going to go back. I had an empire going. At Oregon, you know, I'd built a dynastic type team and type program. I see what that Saban fella's done there in Alabama. I don't feel that he did much better than I did his first go round. Let's go back.
Yeah. At the end of the day, I completely feel like he's a college coach. Uh-huh. Like, it's just the way that he built that system up. Like, because you can't build an NFL team up that same way. It's just, it's a different.
Yeah.
You don't go sit down in their living rooms with the kids and convince them to come play for you. You have to deal with the general manager and contracts. And
exactly. I think he should be at a team. So, I'm playing the game where if I'm Chip Kelly, I look for, now see, this won't be open, but something like an LSU opening. Because in the SEC, there's no team like that. And if you build an offense, like, first of all, he wants that attention.
Oh, yeah.
He wants the attention. SEC, instant attention. There's no other conference even close to the attention that you could get from the SEC.
Oh, right.
And if you build up that offense in a way that defenses in the SEC just simply are not accustomed to, like, there's just nothing like it. And there and athleticism in college, like that, the highly athletic fast offenses, they are just better against college defenses because not every college defense is
Alabama.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Alabama would be the one game a year that you'd be like, "Ooh, let's watch this one."
It's gonna be a fight, yeah.
Uh-huh. But that's the kind of thing that, you know, I'm trying to think of any other team that might be open next year. I guess.
I don't know. There's a few options, but, like, for the most part, I feel like there were probably three solid situations this offseason.
Uh-huh.
That, you know, just the nature of him not getting fired in San Francisco means right. he couldn't apply. Because, I mean, like, that kind of offensive system is exactly
what... He could have
Bobby
Petrino did. Going to Arkansas.
Well, like, that offensive system is, like, what every team in the Big 12 does.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, Baylor
right.
could have easily said... We want to get back to
uh-huh.
super glory really quick. LSU was there, you know. I mean,
yeah.
and they went with the interim coach, sort of surprising everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But Like, I don't see anything immaculate about what Ed Orgeron brings to the table, so.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, I don't think that he's going to be an interim hire that could go in a year.
Yeah, I mean, I have a hard time seeing it happening in 1 year. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, this is a team that had so much success with Les Miles, and yet he was still in the hot seat every season.
Exactly.
It's like you're Louisiana State.
Yeah.
Like, I understand that you're traditionally good,
mm-hmm.
but, like, only Alabama is expected to win the championship every year.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you're Louisiana State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Calm down.
Yeah. Put your pants back on.
Yeah.
Why are your pants off?
I think that's a good way to end it, actually. Yeah.
Oh, man. No, but why are your pants off?
EndangerouslyCreative.com